everyone. We are going to continue our discussion of free will today and return to the question we began discussing last week, the seeming incompatibility of free will and divine foreknowledge. We question that so much troubled many of the Rishonim. And we're going to begin today with a radical position which is largely rejected and perhaps even considered heretical by some, and that is the view of Rabbeinu Chasdai Kreskes, who at least to some degree seems to have denied free will. Just a word on Rav Kreskes. He was born in 1340 in Saragossa. In Barcelona. He died in 1410 in Saragossa. He was a student of the Ran. He was a leader of the Jewish people in Aragon. And he wrote, among other things, a work called Or Hashem, which is a philosophical work. It's a critique of the Rambam, among other things. And in section 2.5, he deals with the issue of freedom. Now, Or Hashem is a difficult work in general, and I admit that I'm not sure I understand his perspective on free will, so I'm going to try my best to present it as I understand it, though admittedly I might be incorrectly understanding it. I guess that's true about everything I say, but especially here. Okay, so in Or Hashem, Chelek Beis Parakei, he begins by arguing or noting arguments in favor of contingency and arguments in favor of determinism. So, for example, concerning contingency, he offers five philosophical arguments and two arguments from the Torah that, in fact, we do have free will. One of the philosophical arguments is the perception of freedom. As we noted earlier, we feel free. Presumably, our perception is correct. One of the arguments based off of the Torah in favor of freedom is the mitzvos. The fact that Hashem commanded us to do mitzvos presumably assumes and rests upon the fact that we're free to choose as we wish. Then he argues in favor of determinism. He offers seven philosophical arguments and two arguments based off of the Torah in favor of determinism. So one of the philosophical arguments he offers is the notion of cause and effect. If everything has a cause and the causes are fixed before the action takes place, then presumably the effect is determined. An argument based off of the Torah in favor of determinism is divine foreknowledge. If God knows the future, then it cannot be, he claims, that we are in fact free. Now, having argued in favor of both positions, the Or Hashem offers what he thinks is the correct answer. What is the resolution? His answer is the following. He says, first of all, the arguments in favor of that which is possible, or contingency, only indicate that things are possible or contingent with respect to themselves. They don't necessarily argue in favor of the fact that they're contingent with respect to their causes. However, the argument in favor of determinism, such as divine foreknowledge, don't contradict the notion that they are contingent or possible with respect to themselves. And therefore, the conclusion is that things are, the way he puts it, are mechuyav bivchinas sibaso, ve'efshari bivchinas atzmo. They are mechuyav, necessary, with respect to sibaso, their source. However, efshari, they are possible, bivchinas atzmo, with respect to themselves. Now, what exactly does that mean? Not so clear. What does he mean that they are determined with respect to their causes? So let's take an example. This example is given by the Sefer HaIkarim of Albo when he discusses the perspective of Chas Dicrescus. So he writes the following. Let's take the example of the weather. Let's say it's going to rain tomorrow. Now, with respect to the rain itself, it may rain or it may not rain. But with respect to the causes of the rain, let's say humidity, atmospheric pressure, wind direction, etc., so it could be determined today that it will rain tomorrow. Now, it's true that the weather forecasters frequently err, but that's not because it's inherently indeterminable. Rather, it's because they don't know all the factors. They haven't considered the myriad of factors. They know some basic things, so they could make a prediction, which sometimes turns out to be correct and sometimes turns out to be incorrect. But if a person knew all of the factors, and they also understood how the factors actually cause and manifest themselves with respect to the actual weather, so then in fact they could predict with 100% certainty whether or not it's going to rain tomorrow. Now, if that's true, then in what sense is it possible? So the answer is because they could have turned out differently. And Rav Kreskes says the same thing is true with respect to humans' actions. Now, sounds like he's saying that things are contingent, theoretically, though in actuality they are determined. I'll show you an interesting thing. If you look on page 17 of your source book, so I have here a quote from Rav Kreskes, and this highlights one of the difficulties in learning Rav Kreskes, which is when I saw this line, I got really confused, and I actually consulted a expert in Rav Kreskes, Dr. Warren or Zev Harvey, and he pointed out that the following line was put in by a later person who didn't quite like what Rav Kreskes was saying, so he added some words. So this is the line that if you look at the older printed editions, it says, "Haderech hanachon lefi haTorah, yadvarim efsharim b'vchinat sibasam ve'atzmusam." Now that is the questionable word, u'mechuyavim b'vchinas yediyas Hashem. Anyhow, now the question is, why is this true? In other words, why can't it actually go both ways? Couldn't a situation exist where the causes are not determinative? Well, let's give an example. Yesterday, I was deciding whether I should have pea soup or vegetable soup for lunch. Now, what caused me to determine this? So, there are various factors. I like vegetable soup better. On the other hand, I had a vegetable soup for dinner last night, so maybe I want to change. So, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I got to the place of choice. I said, this way or that way. I couldn't decide, and then I picked one. So I picked vegetable soup. So why is it that it has to be the case that these things were determined? So Rav Kreskes says, well, what ultimately caused me to choose? It must have been something. Whatever it was, whether it was the fact that the lighting in the room made the pea soup look slimy, I don't know what it was. I might not be fully aware of the factors that caused me to make this choice, but it must have been something. And that something was already there. And therefore, in that sense, it was already determined. Now, another reason that he uses to argue in favor of determinism is, as we mentioned, the fact that God knows what I'm going to choose in advance. Now, last week, we saw and considered a number of reasons why foreknowledge may not necessarily contradict freedom, but like Ralbag, Rav Kreskes assumed that it did. Now, having argued philosophically in favor of this position, Rav Kreskes has to now deal with a number of questions, mostly theological questions, the arguments that were put forth by the Rambam in favor of free will. So, one of the points that the Rambam raised is the fact that we, or even going earlier, Rav Sadia Gaon raised is the fact that we feel free. Doesn't that feeling of freedom indicate that we are free? So here Rav Kreska says no, that perception relates to what I feel, but that doesn't necessarily correlate to objective reality. He writes, Hadvarim hamusagim einam musagim, ki teva hadvarim, hamusagim, aval kefi teva hamasig. I have to look back. I don't think I wrote that down correctly. Anyhow, his basic point, though, is that a person is not always aware of the factors that make their decision, that determine their decision. The fact that we feel free doesn't necessarily mean we are free. But what about mitzvos? How does he relate to mitzvos? So take a look at the bottom of page 17. That the claim that if things are determined, so then the purpose of mitzvos and averos are for naught. If things were inherently determined, so then indeed the mitzvos would be for naught. But, in fact, they serve an important purpose. Meaning to say that if the Torah was commanding something that was inherently impossible, like to jump over an ocean, so then in fact there would be no purpose of mitzvos. But what then is the purpose? So he writes that inherently, as we said, a person does have free will. However, determinism only stems from God's foreknowledge or other external factors. So the purpose of mitzvos then do have an effect in the sense that they are a factor that will steer a person away from doing that which is wrong. For example, the idea is God's foreknowledge or the factors say that given reality X, Y will choose Z. Okay, well, let's change reality X. The mitzvos, when Hashem gave us the Torah that said don't do X or do Y, so that azhara, that mitzvah, will in fact be one of the factors that will cause me to do something different than that which I would have done had the Torah not been given. So mitzvos create the reality, right? Think of it this way. There's a value in observing Shabbos. Now, had the Torah not commanded the observance of Shabbos, so I would not have observed Shabbos. So the fact that the Torah did command me to observe Shabbos will in fact cause me to observe Shabbos, which is something which is valuable. What about justice? That was another argument put forth by the Rambam. If there isn't true freedom, so why does it make sense that a person is rewarded for his good deeds, punished for his wicked deeds? After all, these choices were not truly his own. So he writes, this is also 4 or 5 lines down on page 18, V'ulam hata'ana lekucha me'agmo ve'onesh, Shimaya Adam Muchrach b'masav hayagmol va'onesh aleihem avel v'chuko yisparach yira'eh shehi taina chazaka levatel kol chiyuv. Doesn't it indicate that there isn't determinism? V'amnam kishenisbonen ba ein hatara mimashi yiksha v'zeh shim hayagmol va'onesh mischayvim me'ha Avodos v'haaveros k'shehischayev b'hamisuvavim min hasibos. Hine lo yomar bahem heyosam avel k'mo sheinenu avel hakarev al eshe yisraf v'im haya korvaso alav b'zulas ratzon. He gives an example. What's his example? if you put your finger in a fire, your finger will hurt. Now, is that unjust? No, it's natural, he says. And even if I put my finger in my fire, not because I decided to do it, but for some other reason, somebody pushed me into a fire, it's still going to hurt. Rav Kreskes is saying that rewards and punishments are not actually external rewards and punishments. They're natural consequences of the good deeds and the bad deeds that a person does. So if they do that which is right, naturally they will experience certain types of spiritual pleasures. Olam Haba is the natural consequence of the spiritual purification that a person has achieved while on this world. And because it's a natural consequence, the fact that the choices might have been made without true freedom is not a problem. Ultimately, Rav Kreskes argues for a form of compatibilism, one in which both determinism and some sort of freedom is possible. How exactly he does this and what exactly he means is very difficult, at least for me, to understand. It's actually interesting. Most contemporary philosophers adopt a type of compatibilistic approach in which there is determinism, but determinism somehow doesn't contradict free will. And these types of approaches are highly unintuitive, because they seem to be accepting a paradox. Now, Rav Kreskes didn't think he was accepting a paradox, and he offers a solution, as do many others. But at the same time, it is something that's very hard to wrap your mind around. Now, Rav Kreskes' view was largely rejected or ignored by traditional Jewish thinkers. But what we're going to consider next is an approach that might have some similarities, and that is an approach that are found in many Sifrei Kabbalah. We're going to develop it from the thought of Rav Tzadok of Lublin. So we're on page 18, and just a brief word about Rav Tzadok before we begin his approach. Rav Tzadok HaKohen Rabinowitz of Lublin lived from 1823 to 1900. He stemmed from a Lithuanian family. He was known as a prodigy from an early age. He was called the Eloi of Krynik. And he got married very young. When he was a teenager, he traveled throughout Poland and meeting many of the greatest Rabbanim of the time. He's actually looking for a Heter Meir Rabbanim, but that's another story. He eventually became a chassid of Rav Mordechai Yosef Liner, otherwise known as the Ishbitzer. After the death of the Ishbitzer in 1854, he became a Talmud of Reb Leibele Eger. And following Reb Leibele Eger's Petira in 1888, he was persuaded by his Hasidim to become a Rebbe himself. He wrote prolifically, though I think none of his writings, many of his writings we actually lost, and he refused to have them published, so they were published after his death. If you look at many of his writings, they intertwine brilliance both in Nigla and Nistar, and sometimes weave them together. An example of that is his work, Takanas HaShavim. Now, Reb Tzadok's thinking had a very powerful influence on many of the great Baalei Machshava of the 20th century. If you read the writings of Rav Kook, Rav Dessler, Rav Huttner, Rav Gedalia Shur, and Lahavdil Ben Chaim L'Chaim, Rav Moshe Shapiro, and others, you will see and hear a lot of Reb Tzadok. Sometimes he's quoted directly, sometimes you see ideas from Reb Tzadok that perhaps many of these thinkers present in their own signon, but his effect was quite significant. So on that note, we're going to see Reb Tzadok's treatment of the issue of foreknowledge and free will. He deals with this in a number of places. We're going to see one particular paragraph from Tzidkas HaTzadik Os Mem on page 18. Now, Reb Tzadok begins by noting or considering the famous Gemara that says that when a person does tshuva me'ava, zdonos nasos zchuyos. And the question is, what does that mean? Why should an avera turn into a zchus? I could understand that tshuva will allow my sins to be forgiven, wiped out. I won't be punished for them. But why should an avera that I did be considered a mitzvah? And there are other approaches to this question. Some say if a person grew through the experience of doing the avera, so then that itself is a zchus. This is what Reb Tzadok says. Iker ha-tshuva, hu, ad shi-yoyer Hashem einav, shi-yuz donos kis-chuyos. Rotze lomar, shi-yakir v'yavin, shi-koma shi-chata, ha-yagam kein b'ratzon Hashem yisbarach. So he begins by saying that the iker tshuva, tshuva me'ava, is when a person recognizes that even the averos that they did were Ratzon Hashem. In fact, in another place, in Tzidkas HaTzadik Os Kuf, Reb Tzadok writes, Shuva hainu shemeshiv oso davar el Hashem yisborach. What's a lomar? Shemakir shakol poel Hashem yisborach v'kocho. Afilu amachshava terem notra belibo shel adam. Shuva means attributing the acts to their source. And what is the source of everything? God. God is the source of all that happens. So therefore, it turns out that even a person's averos are the will of God. And when a person recognizes that even their averos are the will of God, just as mitzvos are the will of God, so then averos, like mitzvos, becomes zechuyos, because they're all, after all, the will of God. Now, internalizing this message is not easy. For example, if a person truly believes, ein od milvado, that there is nothing besides the will of God, so then they presumably never would have sinned in the first place, at least in the normal sense. This week's Parsha is a story about Avera Lishma, at least according to some thinkers, which also relates to this, but we'll leave that out for now. So the realization, therefore, Reb Tzadok says, goes well beyond tshuva meyira. Tshuva meyira is typical tshuva. Charata, a person acknowledges that they made a bad choice, they regret having made that choice, they feel bad about it, they have kabbalah al haba and the like. And that form of tshuva is effective insofar as it gets rid of the averos. So a person is forgiven for his sins. But there's no reason why they would turn into zchuyos. They only turn into zechuyos when a person comes to a recognition and internalization of the reality that everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, there are a lot of hands up, and as there should be, because this doesn't seem to make much sense. On the contrary, it seems to contradict the entire Torah. So let's read on a little bit more and see if we have a better understanding of this. If we don't, so then we'll leave it. So, continuing, Kemosha Amruzal, Shlosha Psukim Vechule, Vatasi Boses Libam, Vasher Herosi Vegomer. Part of the difficult thing, aspect of learning Reb Tzadok is that he writes very tersely with lots of Vechules. Some of the newer printings of Reb Tzadok's writings help you a little bit because they have footnotes in which it actually quotes the entire memory of Chazal. Reb Tzadok was writing to an audience that knew Shas and Midrashim and the like. So usually he just writes a couple words and writes Vechule. So what Gemara here is he quoting? He's quoting a Gemara. It's on the bottom of page 18 that says the following. V'amar Rebbe Elazar. Eliyahu etiach dvarim klape mala. Eliyahu spoke insolently towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shenemar, v'hata haseibosa es libam achoranis. Eliyahu said, you, meaning you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, turn their heart backwards. It's you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who caused them to sin. Eliyahu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why are you upset at Klal Yisrael? It's your fault. Amar Rebbe Shmuel bar Rebbe Yitzchak, minayin shechazar HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'hodu lal Eliyahu. How do we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu conceded that Eliyahu was in fact correct? Dichsiv v'asher herosi. The pasuk says, I have wronged, meaning I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have wronged them by causing them to sin. Amar Rabbi Chama, Rabbi Chanina, Ilmale Shalosh Mikros Elu, Nismota Tu Ragleim Shalsone Yisrael. Were it not for these three psukim, all of which imply that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is responsible for the sins of Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, it's a euphemism, the Jewish people would have slipped. What are the three psukim? Chad, Dechsiv, Vasher Herasi, the pasuk that we just quoted. God says, I caused them to sin, I did bad to them. V'chad, Dechsiv, Hinei Kechomer Biyad HaYotzer, Kein Atem Biyadi Beis Yisrael. V'chad, Dechsiv, Vasirosi Es Lev HaEven Mibsarchem, V'nasati Lachem Lev Basar. Rav Papa Amar Mehacha, V'es Ruchi Etein Bekir Bechem, V'asisi es asher b'chuki teilechu. So here we have a number of psukim which seem to indicate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in fact the cause for our sinfulness. Now, what does everybody else say about these psukim before Reb Tzadok, we see Reb Tzadok's perspective? So the psukim are difficult. The Rambam, for example, writes, in Perek Vav of Hilchos Tshuva, maybe we'll get to it another time, that there are times that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does in fact limit free will as a punishment. This was true with the case of Paro, but the Rambam says it's not just true with Paro, sometimes it's true with respect to whole generations. And he cites these psukim, these very psukim, as proof for that theory, that there are times that HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually, to some degree, takes away the freedom of individuals and even vast groups of people. Now, Reb Tzadok notes, by citing this Gemara, that the simple reading of the Gemara does not support the Rambam's reading, because the Gemara cites seems to indicate that this is something general. Were it not the case, Nismotetu Ragleim Shalsone Yisrael. It's not talking about the exception, but the rule. Now, what then does that mean? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the cause for our sinfulness, well, what's going on? First, it actually sounds like a position, sort of a Kabbalistic version of Rabbeinu Kreskes that we started with. So the first thing to keep in mind is that awareness of the idea that everything is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not something that is easy. Let's say a person goes ahead and they take a test and they do really poorly. So they say, it's Yad Hashem, Kol Bidei Shamayim, Ein Od Milvado, great. Okay, I have nothing to worry about. The next test comes along. This time they decide to study. So they study and they work really hard and they actually get a good grade. So they get their grade back and they said, my hard work, it really paid off. So obviously they're being inconsistent. Which one is true? The truth of the matter is they're both correct. On one level, had they not worked hard, then they probably would not have gotten a good grade the second time. At the same time, it's also true, Reb Tzadok says, that everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The question is, from what perspective will you live your life by? From the perspective of Ein Od Milvado, or from the perspective that there is in fact freedom in this world? Let me give you another example. The Gemara in Sanhedrin famously says, it's on page 20, Samach Zayinam at base. Ein od milvado. Amar Rabbi Chanina afilu ledvak shafim. Ein od milvado means that there is nothing besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even kishuf. And we have a story. Hayi isasa davi kamahadra lemishkal afra mituse kared Rabbi Chanina. Amar la. I mistayas zili avidi. Ein od milvado ksev. So there was a certain witch who tried to harm Rabbi Chanina, and Rabbi Chanina wasn't concerned. Ein od milvado. Ein ivam Rabbi Yochanan lama nikra shman kshafim shamach kishin pamalya shalmala. In other words, what Rabbi Chanina did was reckless. After all, mechashvim do have a certain power. Shani Rabbi Chanina dinafish zechusei. So if you take a look at the Nefesh HaChaim, the next source, what emerges is it's not just that Rabbi Chanina was a big tzaddik and that he didn't really have to worry about the mechashvim. Rather, the pshat is that Rabbi Chanina had internalized the truth of the reality that ein od milvado. And for someone who realizes this and recognizes this, then in fact other forces have no power over them. The Nefesh HaChaim actually extends this perspective to Teva, as well as the metaphysical realities such as Kishuv. Teva and Kishuv and the like have no effect and no power over the person who truly recognizes that Ein Od Milvado. Now what's clear from the Gemara is that this was a Madrega which was not easily achieved. It was attributed to Rabbi Chanina, but it was not something that most people, it was not a level that most people had reached, and therefore most people should in fact take precautions to protect themselves against things like Teva and Kishuf. What's the pshat? The pshat is that when we look at reality, we see things that seem to contradict the notion of Ein Od Milvado. For example, we see cause and effect. We see Teva. We see a world in which if you work hard and you study for a test, you're likely to do well. And if you don't study, you're likely to do poorly. We see a world in which the reality, the true reality of Ein Od Milvado is not apparent. And accordingly, we tend to live our lives from that perspective. An aspect of that perspective is free will, that we actually choose our destiny and our choices are what determines what happens in our life. And that is, in fact, one perspective of reality. However, Reb Tzaduk says, there's a deeper and, in a sense, truer perspective in which it is the case that Ein Od Milvado. And with this, Reb Tzaduk writes, we could understand the contradiction between free will and foreknowledge. Go back to the passage from Sidkas HaTzadik that we are reading. Uketam yediya ubechira shebir harizal sof sefer arba meo shekel kasef sheshneim echad ms kol echad b'makom b'fnei atzmo b'makom ha-bechira sham ein makom liyediya uve'makom ha-yediya sham ein makom lebechira. This is a quote from the Arizal Sefer Arba Meo Shekel Kasef. The complete quote, this is sort of a summary, is in footnote 19 on the bottom of page 18. And the Arizal here is addressing the question of the contradiction of free will and foreknowledge. How are these two seemingly incompatible ideas simultaneously true? And the Ari answers that they are both true, but from different perspectives. Like Reb Tzaddok was saying, one is from a perspective of what seems apparent on this world, and one is from the perspective of Ein Od Melvado. Or to put it a little differently, and for this we need a little bit of hakdama. In the Olam HaSod, sometimes the worlds are described, the universe is described as being divided into four levels: Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, and Nasiya, or Abia, Bereshit Tevos. The worlds of Bria, Yetzira, Nasiya are the worlds which we generally occupy and see ourselves as being a part of. Atzilus is much closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It doesn't reflect HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence. That's impossible, the Ein Sof, but it's closer. Now, what exactly does this all mean? So, as we said before, when we look at our world, we see things that seem to contradict the oneness of God. We see freedom, in which people are making choices independently. We see frequently evil triumph over good. We see teva, we see cause and effect. In earlier eras, there were further things that seemed to contradict God's oneness, such as kishuf, as we discussed before, and other forces, seeming forces of evil. In the world of Atzilus literally means emanation, like in the pasuk of Vayered Hashem ba'anan, Vaydaber Elav Vayeatzel min haruach asher alav. So in the world of Atzilus, these contradictions don't exist. There's nothing besides the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Ari is saying that b'makom b'chira, in our world, in the world of Asiya, so then there is no Bechira. Sorry, there is no Yediyah. Indeed, there is a contradiction between foreknowledge and free will. And therefore, in our world, there is no Yediyah. And at the same time, B'makom Yediyah, in the Olam HaAtzilus, where there is Yediyah, where Ein Od Melvado is the perceived reality, so then, leka bechira. There is, in fact, no freedom. The avoda of a person when doing tshuva and trying to reach a level of tshuva me'ava is to see the world from the perspective of Atzilus, to see the world from a perspective of Ein Od Melvado. And if they reach that perspective and internalize that reality, so then, in fact, their Averos will turn into Zchuyos, because in fact even their Averos were ultimately from the perspective of Atzilus, Ratzon Hashem. Continuing in Reb Tzaddok, Sheshneim Emes, Kol echad b'makom b'fnei atzmo. B'makom ha-bechira sham ein makom li'yediyo, b'makom ha-yediyo sham ein makom l'bechira. That's what the Arizal said to explain the stira between yediyo and bechira, as we just explained. Ukshemasig l'or zeh, ha'atzum, when you understand, internalize this reality. Now, internalizing this reality, as we said before, isn't easy. Everybody, all the Chachamim of the Gemara understood Ein Od Melvado, but it was only Rabbi Chanina who had truly internalized it. But if a person does, as Shavu calls Donosav Beli Yotzim Me'omek Yediyas Hashem Yisborach V'hu V'dato V'ritzonu HaKol Echad Me'achar Shehashem Yisborach Ratzakein Harei HaKol Zechuyos V'zoche L'kapar Gemura Shebiyom HaKippurim Shezeh Sod Sir HaSeir L'Azazel Sheilu aso adam atzmo hayovir avod zara gamur vehu lo yia. With this, he explains, if this is the yisod, the true yisod of tshuva, This also explains the Avodah on Yom HaKippurim, and specifically the Seir La'Azazel. If a person were to do the Seir La'Azazel without having been formally commanded to do so, it would be Avodah Zarah Gemura. What is he referring to here? He's referring to the famous Mahalich of the Ramban concerning the Seir La'Azazel. The Ramban, quoting Chazal, argues that the Seir La'Azazel is basically a carbon to Samael. Now, I remember when I first heard this Ramban, and if you want, you could take a look. It's on page 21, starting on 20. I was shocked. Somebody said that the Ramban says this, and I said, that's impossible. That's a Avodah Zarah. If you take a look, there's a nice quote on this topic from the Rav in Al Tshuva. According to Nachmanides, Azazel is Satan. This is a shocking idea. God help us. How could Nachmanides even suggest such a thing? Surely to sacrifice a goat to Satan is idolatry. This is indeed a horrifying explanation of the word Azazel. Well, the problem is that the Ramban says it. Chazal seemed to say it in this Medrash Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar above. So, what does it mean? So the Yesod is as follows. Back to Reb Tzadok, page 18. Shehu Yisod v'chol averus hasaros miratzon Hashem Yisbarach. Rak she'aseir hu al yedei ratzon Hashem Yisbarach shehu mitzuve l'shalcho lo. Na se'od mitzvah v'lo aveira. What does that mean? The Satan is also a malach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Satan is also an Eved Hashem. Most of the year, we see the Satan, who hayetzer hara, who malach hamoves, as something that is a force that is against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a force of evil. The reality, though, is that this is not the case. That the Satan is a malach of Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created forces in the world, and even, in a sense, created evil. As the Pasuk says, Yotzer Or Uvar Yechoshach, Ose Shalom, Uvorei Asara. It doesn't say Vorei Sakol, it says Vorei Asara. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created evil for a purpose. However, that too comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we go ahead and we offer a karban to Samael, we are essentially saying that Samael is also an Eved Hashem. He too eats at the table of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're saying that Ein Od Milvado. We're saying that there is nothing else besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, that is essentially trying to reach the madrega of Tshuva Me'ava. We do this only on Yom Kippur, because only on Yom Kippur do we seek to reach the level where we truly recognize that Ein Od Milvado, and even the forces in the world that seem to contradict HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are in fact coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is the avod on Yom Kippur. That's the avod of Tshuva Me'ava. Vayin Ramban Parshas Achrimos Nos Ninchelak La'Azazel Shu Hara Mitzad Ma Shehashem Yisparach Tziva La'Seis Lo V'Nimtza Ha'Avera Mitzvah. What would otherwise be an Avera is now a Mitzvah. Why? Because even Averos are Ratzon Hashem. Yes. Because by offering the carbon to Samael, we are in fact offering the carbon to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that too is part of Ratzon Hashem. In other words, if we direct the rest of the year, we just offer karbanos to Hashem, right? The chiddush in Yom Kippur is that by offering a carbon to Azazel, and we thereby acknowledge that Azazel is an Eved Hashem as well, that we are in fact offering a carbon to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're hainu hach, because Ein Od Milvado. I feel like there's no way I'm going to answer these questions. Yes?
Why does it matter if somebody has this perspective or doesn't? If that's the truth, the truth is, you don't know about enough. Even if he does have that perspective, Hashem should say, look, through somehow he caused this, he's the source of it, and not to blame.
The answer is because both perspectives are true. It's not that the Olam Atzilus is true and the perspective, like the Ari said, b'makom ha-bechira leka yediyah, b'makom yediyah leka bechira. It's not the pshat that really the reality is there's no bechira, and that's it. B'makom bechira leka yediyah. And the reality, in a certain sense, that we exist within is also true. You see, we've seen, let's say, two types of approaches to dealing with this question, and this is a third. We started off by seeing the perspective of the Rambam and Rav Sadia Gaon, who say there is no contradiction. Both Yediyah and Bechira are true, and they are in fact compatible. There's no contradiction. Then we saw the approach of Ralbag and Rabbeinu Kreskes, who said no, that in fact there is a contradiction, and one is true and one isn't. And now we see the approach of the Arizal, who's saying they are both true, they're contradictory, and therefore true in different places or from different perspectives. And when we live in the world of Bechira, so that Bechira is true. And hence, if a person doesn't reach this Madrega, so then they are, in fact, there's Donos, are Zdonos. And if they do tshuva from the reality in which they exist, in which there is freedom, so then they have Charata and Kabbalah Laban and the like, so then their Zdonos will be forgiven. But if a person can come to a different reality, then in fact, in that other reality, they will experience things differently. So to put it differently, just like Lamash Lama Davar Domeh, people were affected by Kishuf unless they actually internalized this idea of Ein Od Milvado. So too, people are these donos don't become schuyos until a person actually realizes and truly realizes that Ein Od Milvado. Now, let me just say that, I'm happy to continue to take the questions for a couple more minutes, that first of all, this idea is obviously based off of Torah Hasod, and it is to some degree not rational. It's certainly not something that we could come to on our own. The ideas in Kabbalah are known to us through Kabbalah, through tradition, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, as the Ramban says at the beginning, or perhaps through certain Giluyim coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the like. As opposed to the earlier approaches to the problem that we considered earlier today and last week, which generally speaking attempt to resolve the problem from a perspective that is rational and logical, this perspective is different. And the ideas of Kabbalah cannot, while true, cannot be, we're not on the Madrega to really learn them or understand them and the like. Maybe it shouldn't even be, we shouldn't be doing this at all. But I do think that to some degree this is something that perhaps we can begin to understand, begin to relate to. It's an idea that once you see it, once we've developed it, you'll see it all over the place. In Rambans, in Nefesh HaChaims, in the writings of Reb Tzadok, but many others. Rav Kook, for example, I guess we don't have time to go into Rav Kook's perspective, but Rav Kook writes the same perspective on tshuva. If you want to just see a place where you see the closeness between Reb Tzadok and Reb Kook. It's on page 19. And so perhaps it is valuable. Maybe we'll just take a quick look at what Reb Kook writes, because I think it's an idea that helps us deal with Reb Tzadok's presentation in a way that perhaps can help us a little more in a practical sense. Reb Kook writes, I guess we'll start from the. All right, we'll start from the beginning. Achad me hayisodos hatshuva b'machshavto shel ha'adam hu hakaras achrayos shel ha'adam al masav. The first step in tshuva is accepting responsibility. Sheba mitoch emunas ha'bechira ha'chafshe shel adam. And that responsibility stems from accepting that we do have freedom. In other words, step one to tshuva is accepting that we are responsible for our choices, and thus we could also change. As we noted earlier, that's why Hilchos Tshuva contains the discussion of Hilchos Bechira. Uvizeh hu mivarer le'atzmo es chofesh ritzono ve'otzem yecholto al sidrei chayav u'ma'asav u'mitoch kach hu mefaneh lefanav. Once he accepts responsibility, so then he can return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, l'chadesh eschayev b'seder hatov, which is the idea of tshuva, asher yakir shehu mutzlach ba'ado, kasher yishav mimekor hadas, hamischaber el kedushas or haTorah, hamishivas nafesh. And then Rav Kook writes, after writing about tshuva is all about accepting our responsibility by acknowledging our freedom, Rav Kook writes, "V'achareya yediyah habehira, she'ashela al davar shnei hafachim b'nosei achad, hu rak tchuna yachasit lanu." However, after having understood that we are free, a person could also acknowledge that two opposite perspectives on a single topic are both true, or can both be true, and it's only from our perspective that there's a contradiction. This relates to the topic that we briefly alluded to last week. Last week we noted the view of a number of Rishonim that God can't violate logic. Rav Kook has a different perspective. Logic is only a reality from the human perspective, but does not reflect that which is ultimately true. It's yachasit lanu, and therefore two opposite realities can both be true in reality. Ve'ena shayachet klal b'chok borei kol, and memela then are not true with respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Adon kol chukim, who is anyway the creator of all law, v'sibas kol asibos, mikor hachachma ubone hatvuna Baruch Hu, hinenu nechonim lavin, shiyesh makom, גם להשכחה של בחירסו של אדם וחושו וגם להי בחירסו ויחושו. Once you understand that opposites are possible, then the idea of the Arizal, that Yediyah and Bechira are contradictory and yet simultaneously true, becomes possible. והדברים נמשכים מכל הזרמים שבהוויה, אך כל זמן שלא שב האדם מחטאו. But until a person has done תשובה, Lo sider es orchos tshuvaso, hare humunach tachas hasevel shebechiraso. He's under the yoke and the burden of his bechira vashma kol al kol masav v'chol totzosav hareos mutalos alav. But once a person has done tshuva, amnam achare ha'aras hatshuva. He's using almost the same lashon as Reb Tzadok. Miyad nimsarim l'mafreya kol hamagrao shebechayav v'chol hamasav. Everything becomes a Kodesh Baruch Hu, because ain't od milvado. V'kulam ne'arachim ichutz liyisod chushol b'chiraso. And thus, after he's done tshuva, he sees that all of his decisions weren't truly free. So to do tshuva, you have to acknowledge your freedom. But after having done tshuva, you see retroactively nothing was actually free. Umitzdarfim heim l'rishus hanhagas hanhagah elyona rishus gavawa. You give them back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You say, God, you did this. Asher kol ma'aseinu pa'olos. And this idea that it actually happens after tshuva is also in Reb Tzadok, if you see it in the next source. That is the idea of tshuva. So, practically speaking, what Rav Kook is saying is, how do you do tshuva according to this mahalich? The truth is, you do tshuva the same way. Because tshuva, according to everybody, begins in accepting responsibility and freedom. However, once a person has done tshuva, then they come to this new ha'aras panim, this new or, in which everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As we saw in this passage from Rav Kook, this is something that is not easy to comprehend and is possible only to comprehend afterwards. It's also something that may not speak to many of you, in which case that's fine. But I think it's something kedai seeing. I know there are a lot of questions. I just want to finish up divine foreknowledge and free will very quickly because we have to go on. The next approach is one which is offered by a number of more contemporary thinkers. In a sense, it's the simplest of all the approaches. You could see it on page 24, some examples. And that is the idea that, as the Rambam notes in Mor Nevuchim, Beis Yud Gimel, as well as many of the Mefarshim, on the first parak of Chumash, Bereishis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created time, and as such, HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists outside of time. And thus, the whole idea of there being a contradiction between free will and foreknowledge doesn't actually make any sense. Because the question presumes that God exists within time. If God knows before we do it what we're going to do, then how could we do otherwise? Well, that statement simply doesn't make sense. If God knows before we do it, there's no such thing as before, because there's no such thing as time. The contradiction exists within time, and we live within time. So from our perspective, it does seem to be impossible. But the reality is that it's not. It seems like a simple, obvious solution, and I think it is, and it's true. As to why others, including the Rishonim, don't say this more explicitly, take a look at the Or Sameach in Hilchos Teshuva Parakei. The next approach, which I guess we're not going to do together, is another Mahalich in the Ravid. Others say explicitly, which is another perspective on compatibility. Now, there's still some questions which I'll take afterwards, either personally or together in a minute. But for now, let's just stop and.